So I'm Dr. Robin Simpson. I'm a retired brigadier and I'm one of the two RCGP Veterans Champions. This podcast is about supporting NHS GPs in the healthcare of veterans and specifically for veterans that have got mental health issues. There are around 2.4 million veterans in the United Kingdom, and that means every NHS GP will have about 30 or 40 veterans on their list. Each year, 18,000 people leave the military and they will become veterans. Once a GP has recognised that a patient is a veteran and they have a mental health problem related to the service, this podcast will be about pointing you in the right direction to available resources within the NHS, specifically telling you more about Operation Courage. To help me this afternoon, I'm joined by Sean Gain and Gary Sell. Both of them happen to be veterans. Sean will tell us about his experience as a veteran, and Gary will tell us a bit about the resources that are available. Sean, I'd be very grateful if you could introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about your military background.
Yeah, hi there. So my name's Sean Gain. I was a rifleman, served a total of 12 years with several operational tours, predominantly in Afghanistan.
And where are you working now, Sean?
So I'm presently working as the Veteran Support Manager for Herefordshire, and I actually work in Hereford City.
Right, and so you're supporting veterans?
That's correct, and their family members.
Thanks very much. And Gary, please could you tell us about your job and what you do?
My name's Gary Sell. I work for Op Courage as a veteran peer support worker.
And could you just tell us what Op Courage is, please?
So Op Courage is a new umbrella service that incorporates the high intensity service, the transition intervention liaison service, and the complex treatment service.
So they're all part of NHS England's support to veterans?
Correct.
Okay, so thanks very much. So I'm going to set the scene and then I'm going to ask Sean to talk about his experiences and Gary to expand on the resources that are available. So there are about 2.4 million veterans in the United Kingdom. Half of them are over the age of 75. A large proportion are now much younger who recently served and perhaps particularly served in Afghanistan, and may well have been troubled by recent events in Afghanistan last summer and more recently events that are happening in Ukraine that remind us on the appalling things that happen in war. Now, veterans under the government's covenant, we need to make sure that veterans are not disadvantaged as a result of their service. And unfortunately, having served in the military, you are more prone to a number of conditions, some physical injuries, obviously, but also mental health. And when we talk about mental health, we tend to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a bit commoner amongst veterans, but not always. Other mental health problems like anxiety and depression are also an issue amongst veterans. In the military, there's a drinking culture, and while you're serving, often alcohol is used as an excuse to let off steam. And unfortunately, when you're a veteran, if you go on with that coping strategy, it may exacerbate existing mental health problems. So alcohol and veterans, I'm afraid, is an issue. And all that might contribute to quite difficult mental health conditions such as post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, you as a GP, it may be you're not aware that the person in front of you is a veteran, and they're unlikely to present saying, I've got a mental health problem as a veteran. They're much more likely to present with headaches or something's happened with their job or there's been some other life event. And it's this podcast is about making you think, could my patient be a veteran? And making that click, is it possible that the reason that you're coming to see me today is any way related to being part of the British military or being a veteran? Asking that single question, have you ever served in the military, could make a difference. And could suddenly be a light bulb moment to recognising that the mental health problem that the patient has got in front of you may well be related to the service. So top tip is to ask that question, have you ever served in the military? And then perhaps recognizing that this person is a veteran, that they might well have a mental health condition related to their service. So this podcast is about making you aware of those conditions and giving you some idea of the resources that are available. So Sean, you're a veteran. I'd be very grateful if you could tell us a little bit more about what you did when you were in Afghanistan and problems that have happened since you left Afghanistan and more recently now that you're a veteran.
I had to deal with, through a number of tours, a variety of different things, from suicide bombers. Had to deal with five within a short space of time on one tour. My last tour, which was Herrick 10, which was through 2009, which was probably one of the more active tours operationally. We also took one of the highest number of battlefield casualties, including deaths and injury. I was directly involved at working out of Wishtan in Sangin, and then as a mentor with the ANA, where we had much more operational freedom, but that also meant we had a lot more operational problems, ranging from the normal, you know, run-of-the-mill stuff, such as being shot at and blown up, through to having a helicopter shot down, which almost landed on us, and unfortunately took the lives of eight individuals on that particular day. Because of this, I believe I suffered quite a few problems. I was also blown over a number of times. Although I didn't sustain any traumatic injuries, I did sustain sort of, you know, nerve damage, etc. But for me, I think as a military person, you are trained to deal with adult males predominantly, and that was fine. I don't recall or have any sort of problems or awareness of any problems of that. But it was when others are involved, such as children, which were directly involved in particular in the helicopter incident. Although we are trained and we reacted, we do our jobs as an infantryman, as a medic. As a father, later on, I found that this had quite an impact on me, although I was not aware of it directly. I thought me drinking was normal, and it's just one of those things that everybody did. It's been mentioned culturally in the armed forces, particularly the army, we dine people in, we dine people out. We have weekend drinks because we were working through the week. So me drinking didn't seem to be a problem. But being very conscious and very green in our household, when my sons noticed up to 12 bottles of empty bottles of Jack Daniels going out in the glass collection, they realised that obviously there was something wrong with Dad, because they hadn't been invited to the particular party that he'd been having. To say I was abandoned was probably strong, but I slipped through the military net, didn't receive any help for a number of years, even though I'd been medically discharged. I'd been sent home. They say medically discharged. They stood me down, I apologise, and I'd been paid, but I had no welfare and no support. My GP, all very helpful and understanding, said, "I don't know enough about it, so I'm not going to do anything." I struggled with that, but I didn't know any different, so I just let it go and carried on medicating, self-medicating, as I was on pain meds that I'd got myself, and Jack Daniels, as I said, mentioned. So for me, it was quite frustrating, probably more for my family, because I didn't really know what was going on, didn't have a lot of awareness, as I was disassociating and other things through that period. So it was, you know, kind of left to family until the MOD realised there was something wrong. And then the fact they'd missed me, bless them. So I was called back, and then they carried on and started engaging with therapy from that point.
So, Sean, listen, thanks very much for sharing that story. So when did you leave the military, and when was it you started to get some support, and what was that support?
So technically, I was officially discharged in 2014. But I was stood down after that tour because I sustained physical, as I say, injuries as well. And I was sent home 2010, and things started happening around 2012-ish. The help I received was via DCMH Tidworth, which was a two-hour drive from my house. And I wasn't allowed to drive for one period of time, so my mother had to drive me. And being I'm 6 foot 1 and 16 stone, she struggled sometimes to get me out of the car. because I had massive problems with getting through security, being back in a camp environment, uniformed people. More than once, the excellent medical attention I did receive that were sitting in the car park on a chair next to me while I was in the underneath the dashboard of my mother's Vauxhall, which is quite an impressive feat, as I say, because I'm quite a big fella and they're not the biggest of cars.
So, Sean, you once you'd left the military, you mentioned your GP. Did you decide to go and see your GP, or did your family send you?
That was the family. And in fairness, although that they are the what he said, and it was out of not wanting to confuse or upset the situation that he said those things. Once he had a clear pathway and was steered by DCMH Tidworth, he then took on board what they were saying, what they were suggesting, and then did as much as you know as he could with the time restrictions, etc., that he had. And he did refer me through to NHS services, but unfortunately they were not positive. And as much as I was asked to go to one particular group, which was a talk-based therapy with in the group environment, I wasn't aware I was the only veteran in the group. They asked, could you talk about one incident or the thing they felt was your problem? I picked one day, one incident out of one tour, and had three people leave the group in tears, and one of those was the therapist. So I then sat down and never talked again.
At that time, just talking about when you did present to your GP, what sort of, you mentioned that you were drinking a lot, but what other symptoms did you have, if you don't mind telling us?
No, not at all. So it was a variety of things. Sleep, which is still a problem for me, although it's now no longer distressing. I would wake or be asleep but screaming and shouting, calling out different things. My partner at the time would have to sleep in a spare room. You know, so I'm quite a large fellow and I would thrash sometimes. And she's only sort of 9 stone ringing wet. So obviously concern for her safety and well-being. I smashed the house up a couple of times. Simple things. It was my reaction, which I understand now, but I didn't at the time. And my sons equally did not understand. They did, as one example, they did the washing up, which as mostly any parent here will, listening to this will go, wow, that's impressive. But they put spoons in the fork drawer, in the tray inside the drawer. I pulled it out, noticed that they were in the wrong place and threw the drawer across the room, smashing it up. They're like, I don't understand what's going on. We were helping. But I understand now, obviously, my subconscious, that was the wrong piece of kit in the wrong place. And to me, as an infantry and medic in the field, I could put my hand on my kit and understand exactly what was where it was with my eyes closed in pitch black. So that to me was a failing. That was wrong, and that could have cost somebody their life in my subconscious brain.
So quite a few things happening at that time, Sean. And eventually your GP did pick it up. And were you referred to an NHS counselling service, or what was the bit that did work for you?
With all due respect, not the NHS. I ended up going through to what was classed as an alternative therapy at the time through a charity called the Warrior Programme, which I attended, and I was still seeing a locum from DCMH Tidworth at the time. So it was a combination of the NHS and MOD because I was bounced backwards and forwards between the two. And he said that I've seen more change in you in 3 days of doing that course than I have in the last years of working with you. So I've subsequently come out of that, and the only support or therapy or treatment, if you will, is through walking with the wounded, through their service.
Sean, and what's life like for you now? You've got a job. Have you been able to move on, or is it still all very much a real issue?
That's a yes and a no. I am still in it from time to time. I am most definitely a lot better than I ever was. I don't drink anymore, which is obviously a massive help. As you will know, that's obviously a depressant. I don't take any medications anymore other than the occasional pain medication. And that's basically when I'm on my knees, because I was living on medication at one point, which is something, with all due respect, I would like to sort of mention to some doctors. I got and I'm not the only one who's observed this, that you sometimes feel like they go down a list and feel what is appropriate to what you're telling them, and you get given that medication and you stay on that medication with no review. And I've experienced that with people who have been doing that for about 12 years of their lives, which is not a cure. It just masks the problem. So, you know, again, I'm not trying to teach people to suck eggs. I was just, I'm talking from, personal and professional experience. I've adopted the sort of the mindful kind of approach to dealing with things. And that was through a very helpful person in the NHS that, did steer me towards that side of things, which has helped massively. And I still practice that. Do sell it a little bit to some people as well, because as an add-on to any other, alternative, therapies that they might be undergoing, as I honestly don't believe that, one shoe does not fit all. Find a solid base and then work out from that base.
Well, Sean, I would like to thank you very much for sharing your experiences. Fascinating listening to you. You've obviously been through the mill and you've done a lot for our country. So thank you very much. And hopefully we can learn from your experiences. So Sean, maybe we'll come back to you. So your GP has recognised that you have got a mental health problem and is wondering what resources might be available to help. Gary, what sort of resources would you say are readily available now to NHS GPs working in England?
There's much more than when Sean was trying to go through the system. Even with myself, I felt like I was getting bounced around when I first presented to a GP. So I completely understand where Sean's coming from. Coincidentally, I was in Herrick in 2009 as well. I understand what was going on that tour quite well. And this is one of the key parts to UpCourage, I believe, is having veterans within the service that can relate to the client, especially not just with experience, but with the language as well. There's a lot of language used by doctors and therapists that are completely alien to the veteran and vice versa. I picked up on a few words that Sean was saying that a GP might not pick up on. And having that understanding of when you're wrapped, that's not cozied up in a blanket, that's you hanging out, which is another word, another phrase, which are all negative things. And I'm noticing that more and more within services now, there are peers, not necessarily veteran peers. I'm a veteran peer because I'm in a veteran service, but even within other NHS services, there are peers of people that have been through the system that the client can talk to. As for UpCourage, like I mentioned before, there's three services in there. The TILS, the Transition Intervention Liaison Service, which most veterans are familiar with, has improved. But by nature, their job is to liaise with other services and try and feed the veteran into the community and what services are available around there. Sadly, a lot of time that does come across as if you are being pushed away, and what services are in your area does differ. But I'm happy that Sean did link up with Walking the Wounded. They're now one of our partner agencies at UpCourage, and I understand that UpCourages around the country have different partnerships. Walking the Wounded is the national ones. So as well as Latil is trying to link people up with services within your area, the service within that I work, the high intensity service, which has only been around for 18 months, is very much on the front line. We go out into the community where people are struggling to get out of the house, get out of the car, and we'll come to them. And we'll also help with social issues as well as physical issues as well. So we're not just a signposting service. We will hand in hand link the veteran up with what they need. So that is through our partner agencies like Walking with the Wounded, also other organisations like All Call Signs, RBL, SAFA, we have links to all of them, as well as different NHS services as well for physical health, like the Veterans Trauma Network. Like Sean said, not one shoe fits all. So we do like to have these conversations with the veteran and try and see what they need and where they would like to go. It's very much about their own pathway.
You said there was three services. I think you've done two services, a till service for those that have just left, and there's a complex service. And the third service, is that the high-intensity service, is that right?
Yeah, so that's the high-intensity service. So that's for veterans in crisis that either can't get out of the house or are expressing suicidal tendencies, which often fall through the gaps. So as well as working for the high intensity service, I've actually been through the TILS and the CTS myself and completely understand where Sean come from about moving around. I didn't get picked up for a therapy within the NHS until I pretty much exhausted all options with other services.
So Gary, if a GP, an NHS GP picks up someone like Sean, this particular GP doesn't know anything about the military, but they have, because they're an accredited practice, which I'll tell us about later, and they referred someone like Sean into Op Courage, what would happen? So the GP makes contact or referral. What happens, please?
Firstly, especially within London, where we're lucky enough to have all three services under one trust, so referrals are a lot more simpler for us in London. It goes to a central triage service, as such, where they are initially assessed and then divvied out to which service, TILS or the high intensity service, is appropriate for that particular veteran. If it's the high intensity service, we will have a face-to-face with that veteran within 72 hours, and it's slightly longer for the TILS.
But would every veteran be expected, some sort of contact within 2 weeks? Would that be the norm?
Oh yeah, every veteran would be contacted within 2 weeks, no matter what service within Op Courage.
And the referral process is fairly simple. So from the NHS GP's point of view, even if he doesn't know some of the words that Sean used, he recognises it's a mental health problem related to the service, and really that'll be enough information for the referral to take place.
Yes, long as we've got the veteran's name, contact details, and the veteran's consent, we can start engaging with that veteran and start building up a bigger picture. We can get extra details about service, trauma, service number and dates that will help us then link up with MOD, medical services like the DCMH to get a bigger picture on that veteran.
And how can someone be referred? I've talked about the GP referring you. Can you refer yourself? Can charities refer you?
Anyone can refer you. You can do a self-referral. The GP can do it, like you said. And we've had referrals from family members, from charities, from social prescribers. It's completely accessible however you come into the service.
And you said that the majority of the staff, they may be veterans, but certainly they're well trained in understanding the language that Sean used and the military abbreviations that become ingrained in us. So the NHS GP doesn't need to know too much about the background, but he or she's got a referral pathway. And do you think Op Courage has made any difference?
Yeah, it's made a difference for me, that's for sure. I wasn't really sure where to go. I've since been part of focus groups as a service user veteran to help improve the services and the user experience of veterans coming through in the future. And I honestly wouldn't be working for the service if I didn't believe in it.
So listen, Gary, thanks very much. Coming back to Sean, you talked about your experiences following your tours in Afghanistan not quite 10 years ago. How do you like the sound of what Gary's describing now compared to the service that you had in 2014-2015?
Yeah, I mean, I listened to that. That's great. I mean, as I said before, I work in the veteran community now anyway, and I'm fully aware of Op Courage, and I've heard very positive feedback from a number of different veterans that I've signposted myself, as well as others that have in it or have been in it. So yeah, it's really nice to hear, and it's very good in the veteran community for them to hear stories from people like myself, people from like Gary, because there's a thing with the military. We have an inbuilt trust in somebody that served. We might not like the individual, or we might not like their unit, but you will trust and believe that they have been through and understand what it is you're talking about. So when one of us says it's working, that helps psychologically, I believe, the guys and girls, you know, straight away.
Listen, Sean and Gary, thank you very much for sharing your experiences, and Gary telling us about what help's available now through Op Courage. Thanks very much for everybody listening. As the RCGP Veterans Champion, one of my jobs is to help you in your practice become accredited as veterans friendly. Becoming veterans friendly is a very simple step. It's about filling in a short questionnaire that will take you no more than 20 minutes. And as a result of that, you'll get a package of information which will give you more details about the special needs of veterans and the resources that are available. Recently, our programme was evaluated by Chester University, and there's no doubt that being an accredited RCGP Veterans Friendly Practice will really make a difference to your practice, but also to your patients, some of them whom are veterans. So I'd really recommend the RCGP Veterans Friendly Programme to you, and all the information is available on the RCGP website. Just type in RCGP Veterans Friendly to the website. So thank you very much for listening. I really hope that you as an NHS GP will think about many of the things that Sean told us about and lower your threshold for asking a question of your patient in front of you: have you ever served in the military? That simple question might open up a good explanation as to why this patient is presenting in somewhat a troubled way. So please think about accrediting your practice as veterans friendly. And please think about asking that question more often: have you ever served in the military? Thank you very much for listening, and hopefully you'll find using Op Courage a really helpful resource for your patients. Thanks very much.